Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Stellman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me today. We always have great conversations on this show, and it's all part of my intention to empower you with truthful information so you can be as informed and as aware as possible. And that's really what our goal is, isn't it? That's how we can live a life and navigate through this world, getting informed and empowered. And as always, we have some really special guests to help you understand more of what it takes to really be healthy and awake and aware. I certainly like to remind everyone, for those that are new to the show, please go to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com. because it's a place where you can actually get some of my free special reports. You will be sent many of my articles and other events that I'm doing. So it's a great way to stay educated. And also my Facebook page, which happens to be What Women Must Know, is another place to get some great information and invite you to like me over there. So today we're going to be talking about how to read a blood test for a longer healthier life. You know, most of us do get blood workups, and if you have insurance, you can get it at least once a year. There are ways to get a comprehensive blood workup even if you don't have health insurance. It's a really good idea to get some good blood workup, but most people just don't know what it means. They don't know how to interpret it, and my experience is that so many people get back to me with their blood workup, and they go, oh, my doctor says it's fine, everything is normal. But when I ask them to give me numbers, it's a very different story. So we do need to understand what's going on with our blood workup. I do encourage everyone to get some basic blood workup and even maybe more specific things, which we'll talk about. So to help us navigate the world of blood testing, I have a fantastic guest for you today. He is James Laval, who is a nationally recognized clinical pharmacist, board-certified clinical nutritionist, author, educator, industry consultant, and clinical practitioner pioneer in the field of natural therapeutics. He is one of the nation's top influencers in legitimizing integrative medicine and was named one of the 50 most influential pharmacists by American Druggist magazine, as well as 2011 Clinician of the Year by the Natural Products Association. James Laval is also the author of more than 20 books and ebooks, including most recently released publications, Your Blood Never Lies, as well as his bestseller, Cracking the Metabolic Code. He was appointed Metabolic Medicine Institute committee chairperson in 2014. He is also affiliated with George Washington University as the course director in systems biology and clinical lecturer. And James Laval is such a wealth of information and inspiration, and it's such a pleasure to have him to the show today. So welcome, James Laval.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. It's good to connect with you again. It's been a while.
Yeah, and, it has.
I know, and it's always such a pleasure to listen to you. You are such a font of wisdom and education and knowledge. So welcome to the show. It's just great having you here today.
Well, it's always exciting because I know I'm going to get great questions, and I know we're going to be able to share a lot of good information that's going to, you know, really help people to try to empower themselves so that they, you know, they take control of their health. And, you know, it really does start with, you know, that blood test, you know, understanding, you know, gee, what are all these numbers and what do all these words mean? And you know, shouldn't I just wait until my doctor says I'm sick, you know? And so that, it's exciting.
Well, it is exciting because so many people will get their blood workup done, and as they should, but it's like I was saying, you know, people just don't know what it means. They don't know how to interpret it. And often doctors will accept numbers that are within reference ranges, which is this acceptable, you know, amount of numbers. But it isn't necessarily what is our optimal range, and that's what we really want to understand and go for. So staying in the reference range isn't always necessary in our best interest. So we're going to learn what those numbers are and help guide people so they can get involved in this information, not just sit there passively taking what their doctors give them, but actually knowing what it all means and asking the right questions so they can, optimize their health. So I'm looking forward to it because there's a lot that I want to learn as well. And I know your book, Your Blood Never Lies, How to Read a Blood Test for a Longer, Healthier Life, is just offering so much important information, not only how to interpret the various things that are tested in a blood workup, but also the correct nutritional support when something is out of range, which is the critical thing here. So, James, I'd like to just jump in because I think I want to cover as many of these areas that are found on a blood test as possible so people can really leave the show with some great information and strategies. So,
sure.
Good. So where should we start?
Well, yeah, I think the first thing is just to discuss what's it mean when your labs are trending low or high, and then let's just start with what I think are the really important blood tests that everybody should have. So, when you were talking about normal isn't normal, people really need to understand. I always explain to them, like, if your reading is very high normal, and say high is bad, it's the equivalent of if you were a mile away from the Grand Canyon and you took one step, it's not a big deal. If you're at the edge of the Grand Canyon and you take that same single step, it becomes a big deal. And that's how you got to think of your lab values. If they're trending away from ideal, it means you're heading down a path. Probably the most blatant example of this is blood sugar, which I still say people don't know their fasting blood sugars. They don't know what their one-hour postprandial blood sugars are. And I think it's incredibly important. A big study showed so the normal for blood sugar is 65 to 99. Well, there happens to be a sweet spot that's pretty much recognized in the clinical literature between 70 and 84. And although it's not until 99 that you have a problem, but what they found when they tracked 47,000 lives over a decade was that for every point over 84, it represented a 6% risk of you becoming a person with diabetes in the next decade. So you could have a 94 blood sugar, and you could have, which is normal. You go into your doctor and you go, hey, normal blood sugar, good for you. You have a 1 out of 2 chance of being a diabetic in the next decade if you don't change your lifestyle, which includes diet, exercise, and stress reduction, along with environmental issues and, kind of all those things that, you and I talk about, Dr. Selman. But the reality is a number that's trending out of bounds means you're in the throes of a future illness. So I just kind of want to start off. It's easy when numbers are out of bounds because it says high and low, but the reason it's so important is that trend, just like with the number for blood sugar, a lot of people come in, I'm sure, to your practice. I know for me, they have a 97 blood sugar and nobody's saying anything to them. And they already have damage to their blood vessels. They already have possibly damage going on in their brain. They already have damage going on in their kidneys when they have a 97 blood sugar. So that's kind of the first point I wanted to make. And then, I think we discuss, what are the important lab values. I know I just mentioned glucose, and it's hard getting past knowing your glucose because 1 in 2 people in the United States now is either diabetic or pre-diabetic. That's just amazing.
That's a staggering statistic, really.
1 out of 2 people, really? We can't teach people how to take care of themselves with one of the most basic concepts of, and let's face it, taking in too many carbs, taking in too many sugars. I don't see any donut shops closing, and I don't see any broccoli shops opening, right? So, so we still have these issues of, I think, the stressors of modern man cause people to crave. They eat too many carbs. And yes, there's other issues of why insulin receptors get damaged, but man, I got to tell you, I used to not want to teach people how to count calories. I used to kind of be super against it. But over the last 5 years, I found that because we do clinical trials now, and we do surveys of what people are eating, and they have no idea how many calories they're eating and the improper selection of the calories. And when that happens, your blood sugar is going to go up. And when your blood sugar goes up, you're going to gain weight. You're going to make bad lipids. You're going to make small particle lipids that'll penetrate your arteries. And you're going to trigger, because diabetes and insulin resistance is an inflammatory condition, you're going to trigger plaque formation. So for me, everybody should know their blood sugar.
So let's just stay with blood sugar a little bit. So the glucose number, we're talking about fasting.
So a fasting glucose should be ideally between 70 and 84. If it goes down in the 60s, so you're at 68, 67, well, that shows you're tending towards hypoglycemia, right? Your blood sugar's too low. And for every point over 84, it represents a 6% risk of being diabetic. I don't really, like, when people come into me, if their blood sugars are in the low, like the middle 80s, even 88, I don't try to alarm them. I just say, you know what, you may need some magnesium and chromium and zinc and maybe B vitamins. And, hey, by the way, maybe try to exercise a little bit. And let's change your food profile, the way you select your food. And you'll correct that person, you know, pretty easy. But, yeah, once it gets over 90, you got to start getting to work.
So that's such an important point, and everyone really needs to go look at their blood work either now or at the end of the show sometime today, because you really want to see what's going on. So most medical doctors will not comment if that fasting glucose level is over 88 or so. They will still say people are fine. They won't alert people.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, most medical docs are told that until it gets over 99, you really don't need to say anything. And until it gets over 106, you're really not going to start commenting on insulin resistance. And until it's 126, you're not going to be a diabetic. My issue is that what the Kaiser Permanente study showed, one is, you know, for every point above 84, it showed a 6% risk. We need to be talking to our people whose blood sugars are trending 10 years before they even show the first sign of being a person with diabetes. That's what that study really showed, that if you're sitting there with a 92 blood sugar, you are in the crosshairs of becoming a future person with diabetes. And that means more kidney disease, more heart disease, more dementia, Alzheimer's is now called type 3 diabetes, more peripheral vascular disease, more amputations, more non-traumatic blindness, number one cause, diabetes.
And accelerated aging.
They're not being told it.
And accelerated aging. Yeah. All those things are signs of accelerated aging.
Absolutely. And so the other trick I tell people, get a glucometer and measure your blood sugar 1 hour after you eat. The number one event that causes your arteries to plaque is postprandial hyperglycemia. So for our listeners, post-meal high blood sugar. So when you eat a meal, and if your blood sugars go over 140 1 hour after you eat, you are either eating something that's too rich in starches and sugars, or you're eating something that you're immunologically, you know, you're allergic to it or you're sensitive to it. You're triggering your immune system. And that is going to mean you're setting yourself up to start plaquing your arteries. So And this is published in cardiovascular journals. This isn't, you know, the world according to Jim LaValle. We know that postprandial hyperglycemia is the leading cause of plaquing your arteries. So, but if I ask people when I go to a lecture or a seminar and I'm teaching, I'll even ask healthcare professionals, do you know your blood sugar? Only 20% of the room knows their fasting blood sugar. Nobody knows their 1 hour postprandial blood sugar, and it's the number one thing between diabetes and plaquing your arteries. Top things that are going to take you out. It's going to make you lose your vitality, as you say, accelerate your aging process.
You know, I really encourage people to get one of those glucometers and just monitor themselves. It's one of the best strategies you can do to support your health and well-being. It's very simple, and it's really good to assess what's going on within your body.
Oh, without a doubt. And the thing is that you kind of start to understand a pattern. So if you're somebody that has trouble sleeping and maybe your cortisol levels are high, you may find that because you're sleeping through, you're not sleeping well through the night, you wake up in the morning and you do a blood sugar, and your blood sugar is actually higher than normal than, say, other parts of the day. It kind of helps you understand how your body works. If your brain's going to stay awake because you have insomnia or you're worrying about things, guess what it's going to do? It's going to raise your blood sugar to give you the power you need to think when you should be sleeping and resting. And so you can gain a lot of intelligence about your body and how it's functioning just by looking at some basic numbers and measurements. And I think we've gotten so sophisticated, even on the integrative medicine side, right, Dr. Solomon? On the integrative medicine side, we're measuring all these exotic markers, and yet we still aren't getting these basics down that we need to make sure that people know how important they are. And that's one of my big passions. As you know, I'm teaching it, at A4M and Metabolic Medical Institute. It's because I'm trying to teach healthcare providers, hey, look, guys, don't forget about the basics because they're pretty important too.
Yeah. So what are your favorite supplements or strategies to help people bring their blood sugar levels down? In addition to obviously reducing the exposure to carbs, that's your grains, that's your sugar, that's even alcohol, processed foods, anything that has sugar hidden in it. What else would you suggest?
I think it's because I've been doing this now 30 plus years. It's really hard to keep people on modified low carbohydrate diets unless you really have their stress response dialed in. You got their serotonin build up, their dopamine build up. They're not craving at all, and not to mention they just go to social functions. And you know what? We're in a land of plenty, and so it's there. Like I said, if you put a nice Danish out or a sprig of broccoli, most of the time people pick, they're not picking the broccoli, and we want them to, but they're not. So what do you do? So the first thing is you got to have adequate magnesium, chromium, and zinc to make your blood sugar functionality work appropriately. You need those minerals in order to make your insulin receptors work. People don't realize that 92% of Americans are functionally low in magnesium. They don't eat 12 cups of vegetables a day. Raw.
Right.
They're not eating 100 grams of pumpkin seeds a day. Everybody's being told don't eat rice, which you get magnesium from brown rice. And so there's these deficits of these trace minerals. And look, magnesium is the number one nutrient that's associated with developing metabolic syndrome and type 2 diabetes, as well as it's directly associated with calcification of your coronary arteries when you are low in it. So mag, chromium, and zinc, everyone needs it. And people will ask me, well, how much? Most of the studies would say that 500 milligrams of elemental magnesium a day added to your diet, so dietary supplement, could be a big plus for helping you overcome these magnesium deficits, which of course lead to muscle fatigue and muscle cramps, muscle spasms, restless legs, anxiety, insomnia, a whole bunch of things.
PMS.
Yeah, there's just so many things that low magnesium, really has an effect on, right? And so those are the basics. And of course, then if you want to use herbs or other like nutraceuticals that help with, balancing blood sugar, in the exotic vitamin category, you look at benfotiamine, which is a accelerate or an enhanced form of vitamin B1. Alpha lipoic acid really helps the insulin receptors to function better. And then of course, things like bitter melon and cinnamon extracts and gymnema. There's a plethora of botanicals that have shown some benefit. One of the most interesting nutrients, in my opinion, are you familiar with phase 2 at all? It's a white kidney bean extract that's been studied extensively in humans.
Yeah.
So that one is really interesting, right? Because when you take it, it blocks starch absorption. About 60% of the starch doesn't absorb. And so the glycemic load in your blood due to the amount of starch you just ate is dropped by about two-thirds. And because the starch doesn't digest, it becomes resistant starch, and that means it's going to go down into your lower intestine, feed the beneficial flora, which then sends the hormone signals out to your brain that you're hungry. So I love phase two as a dietary supplement strategy when people are saying, hey, look, I'm in meetings, I'm on the road, I can't always eat the way I'd like to eat, or I'm trying to get off starches, but I'm having trouble. You can incorporate phase two as a part of that strategy for managing carbohydrate intake. So that's been a real big favorite of mine.
That's a really great piece of advice. I wouldn't have thought of incorporating that. I mean, I'm aware of it, but I never was really sure how effective it was. So I haven't recommended it, but I will now. I'll take your advice.
Yeah, I mean, the human studies on it were pretty clear that, first of all, the blood sugar glycemic load in humans measured reduced by about 66%. And the other thing was they put people on it, and then they placebo grouped an equicaloric diet, so they both had the same calories, but one took the phase two, one didn't. The people that took the phase two maintained their weight loss at least 12 weeks after they even stopped taking it. So what that told you was that they got the beneficial flora starting to send the hormones like, GLP-1, which, helps your brain to kind of, activate leptin and balance out leptin and ghrelin relationships, which basically dictates, hey, am I hungry or not? Am I going to overeat or am I going to be satisfied? Because we've all had that, right? You get under stress and, all of a sudden you see people hugging a tortilla chip bag in the middle of a grocery aisle, right? They're in, that's what tortilla chip bags giving them love. And, so it's really important from my standpoint as you relate to glucose is what are the nutrients you need? And then what other strategies can you do if you are going to be taking in too many carbs in order to really satisfy getting that glucose to be better controlled?
And I can't remember where I came across this information, or maybe it was one of my other guests, but the order in which you eat carbs also plays a big role. If you wait and don't have bread first, you have your bread at the end, it metabolizes differently and affects your blood sugar levels differently, which is really interesting. So you should always have your proteins, your fats, your veggies first. And then if you want some bread, but never start off a meal with bread, which is, of course, such a temptation when we go to
the Well, that's what everybody does, right? You get the bread basket right away,
So I mean, even if they had the same amount of calories and they had the carbs at the end, it affected their body in a different way.
It's a mixed meal, right? It's kind of like what we tell people when they take oatmeal in the morning. Everybody wants to eat oatmeal, and I'll tell them, look, do a more protein breakfast because it'll fuel your brain better. And if you do your carbs in the evening, we know that it improves leptin signaling, and people will lose more weight on an equicaloric diet if they do their carbs in the evening, and then they're more protein, vegetables, fat-based during the day. But there's some people who go, look, I'm not giving up the oatmeal, right? Oatmeal equals love. My mom made me oatmeal all through my childhood. I have them stir in it some coconut oil and a scoop of protein powder, and then you have a mixed meal for that protein in that oatmeal, which I think is important.
I just want to jump in here, Jim, because we need to remind people that the fats, the healthy fats, and even adding some protein will help slow their blood sugar levels balance them out evenly, release them slowly. So that's why it's so important to include those fats and proteins in your oatmeal if you choose to have oatmeal, which isn't the optimal food, but if you need to, that's the strategy.
Exactly. Well, even if you got, there's a lot of popular like quinoa breakfast cereals with seeds and all that. I just tell people, look at the starches. Learn how to count your starches because all of that dictates your glucose. And here's the issue: once your glucose starts to go out of balance, getting back to our lab test, here's what else starts to shift. Your potassium starts to drop. So as your glucose goes up, your body starts to spill more potassium and more magnesium out of your urine. And you actually retain sodium. Well, what's that mean? Well, that means your blood pressure is going to start going up. So people that are insulin resistant and run moderate to higher levels of blood sugars can be insulin resistant. And that means your vessels are more constricted, your blood pressure is going up, and you're spilling the nutrients you actually need to manage your blood sugar. So it's kind of like a dual-edged sword going in the wrong direction. And so that's the other couple real basic things that on a lab test, you'll get your potassium level. And if it's under 4.5, you have a depending on which study you read, a 2 to 4-fold risk of becoming a diabetic in the next decade of life.
Wow.
And 4.3 is a totally normal potassium. Everybody goes, oh, wow, hey, I know that. But, you know, it's fine. But it really isn't fine. And besides that, when your potassium's low, you are going to have trouble having energy. Your muscles are going to feel weak. Your electrical conduction is off. It's so important for these trace minerals to be intact. So that, you know, that's one of the big things that shift. And, of course, as you look at sodium, you know, sodium's a great guider of you know, adrenal function, right? The more stress you get under, you really start to hold on to sodium. But at one point, you're under so much chronic stress that you start to spill your sodium. You know, you're using it up. And when that sodium dips into the 130s, that's when you know people are going to have something called orthostatic hypotension. They're going to stand up and they're going to get dizzy on standing. And they're getting dizzy on standing because their blood vessels can no longer adjust due to the amount of stress hormones that have been pumped into them. The blood vessels don't adjust to allow for positional changes. So, you know, that's like the old standby, you know, a little bit of pink sea salt, you know, a little pink salt and water for those folks really makes sense because you're actually changing their electrolyte status in their blood, which is affecting their blood vessels when they drink it, if they're suffering from not having enough sodium in their body. So sodium, potassium, magnesium, glucose, all kind of come together to kind of give us a sense of how are we feeling.
And that craving for salt often is symptomatic of adrenal stress. And that's what you're, so the body will crave that salt, get that sodium, which they're spilling. So it's always a sign people should pay attention. If you're going for those potato chips and salty things, maybe you really need to pay attention because your body is saying those adrenals are fatigued.
Absolutely. I mean, that's without a doubt that there's a, you know, the adrenals are being pushed. And you know what's interesting? I try to get this across to folks. Whenever you take an adaptogen for your adrenal glands, what it's really doing is working on your brain. But a lot of people don't realize that every adaptogen known actually works on your brain. And what it's doing is it's telling your hypothalamus is telling your adrenal glands, hey, you know what? I'm not going to give you that stress response anymore. You can recover now. And so it's quite interesting. And so using adaptogens when you're under chronic stress helps you from getting into that state of chronic craving for salt, crunchy foods. I need that salt. I need a salt lick in my bedroom, right, or my living room. I just need salt. So that's really important for people. And, you know, the thing that folks have to realize is your body doesn't operate in a vacuum. So when your magnesium goes low and your glucose goes high, now your lipids start to get altered. And there's a lot of controversy. Oh, does it matter what your cholesterol is? Well, at a broad sense, it doesn't. But if you're insulin resistant and you're low in magnesium, you will start to make little LDL particles. And those little LDL particles, I always explain to people, it's like putting a tennis net across your doorway, and you're trying to throw either BBs or beach balls through the tennis net. If you're making little cholesterol, those BBs go right through the tennis net. And if you're making beach balls and you throw it into the tennis net, it bounces back. The inner lining of your arteries is like the tennis net. So if you make little LDL particles, and that happens when you have high cortisol, it happens when you have high insulin and blood sugar, and it happens when you have low nutrient status like magnesium and fish oil. Now I'm making these really little LDLs, and so it doesn't necessarily matter, well, is your number 130 or is it 120? What matters is what kind of LDL are you making? And that's why all diabetics end up with heart disease, because they make bad cholesterol, and then they oxidize it. Their rate of rusting is higher than normal people. So when you think of plaque burden, that's like the rate of rusting that's occurring in your body on your lipids that were deposited into that tennis net. So it,
okay,
you know,
so
all these things kind of connect.
Let me ask you a question. Will most blood workups have small dense LDL and oxidized LDL in the panel?
You're lofting up these great questions for me. No, they don't. And you have to ask for it. You have to ask for what's called an NMR lipoprofile. You could get something called a VAP. The NMR is a little more accurate. But basically, an NMR lipoprofile, which you can get anywhere. This is not a specialty lab. You can walk into anywhere of thousands of lab draw stations, and you can actually order it for yourself. You can go right. You can order the lab. People don't realize this. They can order lab tests for themselves, and the price is greatly reduced, by the way, when they do it. But you need an NMR lipoprofile, and that will show you: are you making a little LDL? Are you making big LDL? Are you making a little HDL, which is the stuff that everybody says is protective? But if you're not making the right size HDL, it's not protective at all.
Right.
And so until you're told that, you don't know.
Yeah.
And I go over that in the book, by the way.
Yeah, so that's why people have to get your book, because we can't cover everything because there's so much in it. But your blood never lies. Is really the book you want to get. Jim, hang in there. We actually need to take a little break, and we'll be back and talking about more important information. So this is just fabulous. So everyone hang in there. We're going to be talking more about what our blood is telling us. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know with my guest today, James Lavelle. So we'll be right back.
Progressive Radio Network, now on your iPod or smartphone. Go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and click on your device to hear us anytime and anywhere. ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, your home for news and information.
This is Cliff Stewart with A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. AJC Coast to Coast is the place to listen to topics about the fight against wrongful convictions, judicial injustice, and corruption. Join us every Sunday with Sam Thurman, Ethel Lopez, and me from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 Eastern Time on Progressive Radio Network. That's PRN.FM.
Hi there, this is Harvey Wasserman. I am the host of the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show, which airs every Monday at 3 p.m. at PRN.FM. We cover the great issues of your health and wellness, of the health and wellness of the planet, of moving ahead towards a Solartopian, green-powered, holistic Earth. Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
This is Paul Capilcante, host of The Vinyl Experience, and you're listening to PRN, your source for the best in progressive conversation, news, and entertainment.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. We are having this really important conversation with James Lavelle, who's the author of Your Blood Never Lies, How to Read a Blood Test for a Longer, Healthier Life. And we're just having the most important conversation. So before we leave the LDL and HDL world, what's the ideal number for people to have for their oxidized LDL and small dense LDL, which is what we're saying people really should have tested, and it's not generally included in your normal blood workup, but you can either ask for it. Can they get it if they ask for it?
Yeah, they sure can.
Okay, they're asking for the...
They can absolutely ask for it, and they can ask for a particle size cholesterol test, and whether the lab that you're going to uses VAP or NMR, either one of those will be pretty good. I like the NMR more, but if they got a VAP, that wouldn't be half bad either.
And that's VAP for VAP. So do you have a number for us for those values?
Well, it depends on what lab you have for oxidized LDL, but if you think about it, if they give you a range, you don't want to be more than two-thirds up the range. So you only want to be two-thirds up towards the high end, if you're starting to approach the high end, it means you're starting to oxidize too much. Ideally, you'd be halfway in the midpoint or less. It's very clear on the LDL particle number, though. What's in the literature is a particle number of 1,000. So that means if you had a bucket and you were pouring balls into the bucket, 1,000 or less of them would fit. If they were made up of LDL balls, and then that would be ideal. When it goes higher, so for example, I had a patient yesterday with a 2,160 LDL particle number. That means that the particle size was really tiny because so many LDLs could fit in that bucket. So less than 1,000, but I tell people, look, if you're around 1,200 or less, you're probably okay. 1,300 to 1,600, let's see if we can change some lifestyle. Is it stress? Is it too many carbs? Is it low thyroid? And then if it gets up into, 1,500 or more, you think about using things like aged garlic extract, which, when you think of what's the single best thing you can do to reduce oxidized LDL, improve particle size of your cholesterol, in addition to that, help the pliability of your blood vessels, repair your blood vessels. Literally, Kyolic has been shown to regress vulnerable plaque and literally help to normalize the blood vessels. That, to me, is incredibly exciting. It's why I think that aged garlic extract, and the only one out there on the market is Kyolic, is the first line of defense on these, trying to work with these numbers. So once you get up to around, 1,300, start thinking about Kyolic. Once it gets up around 2,000, you think about Kyolic plus bergamot extract. And then if it gets up into the high twos or even the mid twos, sometimes people need to go on niacin until they get their lifestyle straightened out. I mean, and I'm not a big niacin fan. I'm just telling you, I'm not. But it works as a stopgap, like as I call putting a Band-Aid over a bullet hole, until you get their stress under control, their insulin resistance under control, their thyroid better, their sex hormones better, and of course, you amend for their environmental intoxicants, which could be influencing how their lipids are being modeled.
Okay, so can I just recap some of this for people who are listening to me? I don't want them to get overwhelmed. We want to understand. When you get your LDL, that's like, I say it, it's like being told you have a car. But it's not specific enough. It doesn't give you enough information so you know what's really going on, right? It's like a generic term, cholesterol. So what you're saying and what's really at the leading edge of understanding a risk factor is not a cholesterol number. It's these oxidized LDLs and small dense LDLs, which you can ask to have included in your blood workup because they're the dangerous particles that go in and damage the lining of your blood vessels, causing chronic inflammation and then the cholesterol that's patching it up and increasing your risk of blockage. That's what's really damaging the inside of those blood vessels. Do I have that right, Jim?
That's exactly right.
Okay. So don't get upset about your general, generic LDL. You have to get more specific information. Otherwise, it's not really giving you relevant information.
Exactly. That is absolutely correct. And then the next bridge that we have to jump into is, well, what else would cause your oxidized LDL to get triggered? And I think it's something a lot of people don't think about, but when you have chronic food sensitivities and you're eating foods that you're either intolerant to or reacting to, your immune system in your gut triggers an immune response. And so one of the most simple things you can do to figure this out is you can look on your blood test at what's called your CBC, your complete blood count. And under that, it'll have monocytes percent. And monocytes are white blood cells that you get a higher percentage of them when you're under a chronic inflammatory state. And monocytes are what trigger your macrophages, another immune system. So it's kind of like a key that gets inserted into a keyhole and turned. The macrophages get turned on, and they attack your LDL cholesterol. So if you're somebody who's got a lot of food intolerances and your monocyte levels are up, you're literally triggering oxidative forces all over your body, including plaquing. And I have cardiologists that I know, they're really sharp, that say they find themselves being more gastroenterologists these days in the way they educate people how to prevent cardiovascular disease than being cardiologists.
Okay, I get it, because the gut is such a big player in what's going on, and our immune system is responding to the inflammation that starts in the gut.
That's exactly right. So your monocytes, eosinophils, which kind of tell you how much histamine your gut is releasing, and basophils are all listed on a standard test. I call them MEBs, but monocytes, eosinophils, and basophils tell you if you add them up and they're up over 10 as a group, you got some low-grade inflammation bubbling in your body. If you add those 3% monocytes, eosinophils, and basophils up, and it's got to be the percent one, it says monocytes with a percent sign next to it, if it gets up to 14, 15, 16, 18, your immune system is in a full-blown inflammatory response. It's just that it hasn't showed up like, oh, my joints are blown up and aching. Instead, it's, oh, the inner lining of my vessels are being attacked, which you don't really feel that, right? I mean, the first sign of a heart attack, 50% of the time, is death. So it's not like you're feeling the vessels plaquing slowly as, you know, as you're continuing to crank up your immune response.
Okay, so that's really, I mean, that's really critical too, because those are early warning signs of, again, what's invisible. We're not aware of it, we're not feeling it, but it's brewing. These conditions are brewing inside us until we get, you know, a heart attack that often people are so surprised with, you know, how come? Well, it's been brewing for a long time. We just don't have ways to assess it unless you can look at this blood workup and read it and interpret it properly.
Yeah,
so I
have to tell you, that's just, it's so true that, you know, most conditions are growing in you for a decade before they rear their ugly head. And the earlier you can pick up on where your disturbances are, the earlier you can take action and empower yourself to change your course for your future health. Because, you know, your metabolism really is the sum total of all your life experience from the time you're in your mother's womb to today. On, you know, the drug therapies you've been on, the diet you were under, the stress you did, the jobs you've worked, the exposures you've had, all this stuff adds up to create your chemistry. And so you just want to try to, you know, feel your way through. That's why I wrote the book. I got to be honest. I wrote the book because I was tired of hearing people say, well, when they would come into me, well, I went to my doctor and they said all my lab values were normal. And
yeah, right.
My point was, well, okay, but do you feel normal? Well, no, not really. I feel terrible. Well, then maybe we need to look at your lab values differently, right? That was the purpose of the book, because it gives you lifestyle and dietary supplements, what drugs they're going to put you on if those labs are really out of balance, and you know what kind of issues you have with them. I mean, it really does go through and educate you on how to really change those numbers.
Okay, so what would you do if your monocytes are showing really high and the percentage is really high? What's the strategy you recommend nutritionally?
Well, there's a couple things. One, I still like aged garlic there because it regulates the immune system in the gut, and there's some new studies out of University of Florida that show that. So I love aged garlic for that reason. But then the obvious is beneficial flora. So, you know, get a probiotic that has got proven doubling capacity, you know, it takes, you know, when you take it, it's known to double in the digestive tract hourly. Make sure that it survives pH, it's stable, shelf life. So a probiotic is really big. And then a lot of times you have to kind of clean up the unfriendly flora. So, you know, it's using things like cat's claw and berberine that'll knock out some of the unfriendly bugs that have been developing in your gut because it's chronically inflamed. And then if you're really trying to block the inflammatory signal, you know, one of the best things is quercetin, because quercetin binds to your mast cells and stops you from releasing so much histamine, which is what makes your gut leaky. So, you know, your gut gets leaky when you release histamine. And when you're under chronic stress, your nervous system that connects your brain to your gut basically tells you to make more histamine. And that's why people a lot of times go, well, I developed food allergies out of nowhere. Not really. You were probably under chronic stress for a while. Your brain was telling you to release a lot of, you know, cortisol, and your brain was telling your gut to release a lot of histamine, and then your gut got leaky because of the two, and now you're starting to react to foods, even though that process took several years to unfold. But it wasn't that you ate that next strawberry and blew up, that happened out of nowhere. It was a process that your body endured to get to that place of elegance where it was an all-out attack when you ate the next almond or you had a whiff of the next peanut.
Yeah, it's like all these situations are brewing, and then you kind of, you know, you're pushed over the edge. One more thing, one more stress, one more, you know, toxic food. And quercetin is so fantastic because it really does stop those allergic reactions. It's one of the staples that I have, and I've seen it work wonders with people.
Absolutely. And I give people quercetin powder even if I know they're in an allergic reaction. I mean, I'll have them do a gram of quercetin four times a day. You could start with 500 milligrams three times a day if you want to be conservative. You could do a vitamin C flush, like a buffered vitamin C flush if you'd like to saturate your white blood cells so that you don't release histamine and leukotrienes. So vitamin C, quercetin, or big nettle is kind of beneficial. And I'll tell you, the other one that people don't use for the gut that I find incredibly valuable is Boswellia. You know, so mm-hmm. Boswellia resets. So as you get under all this stress and you're reacting and your gut's getting permeable, you turn on your complement immune pathway, which triggers all this acquired immunity, right? And it causes all this immune activation, which then triggers your brain to get on fire, and then your brain triggers more stress. It's a vicious cycle. Boswellia, one of the things that people don't realize is that it helps to down-regulate that tendency to turn on your acquired immunity when it's overexpressed. And so it's a great herb for people with kind of the GI, autoimmune, allergic process. When you have high MEBs, think of Boswellia, actually, as something that could be a lot of value.
And they're making these great formulas that have curcumin and Boswellia in it together, which I think is a really powerful combination.
Wonderful combination.
Yeah.
Wonderful combination. Yeah, it's hard. You know, really, they work beautifully hand in hand. And, you know, you have one literally just directly dampening inflammation and the other one modulating the acquired immune response. And I love it when people are using those two in combination. Probably it works as good as any botanical combination when I'm dealing with people with, you know, irritable bowel and colitises and all that kind of stuff. There's other things you have to do, but it's one of the things that gets people feeling a lot better. I know that.
Well, that's great. Okay, so what's another? So from there, where else would we go with our blood workup? What's the next thing we want to look at downstream?
Well, a big one is like one of my favorites is cortisol. You know, when you think about what causes you to age, it's elevated stress hormones and elevated insulin. So you want to control your glucose and you want to understand your stress response. So, you know, your body's supposed to, you know, pump out a fair amount of cortisol in the morning and then it kind of dips in the afternoon and dips more in the evening and then goes to a very low level at night, at which time your body's supposed to make melatonin so that you can reset your pattern to make cortisol again the next day. And so what we're really finding out is that if you're having trouble sleeping at night, and a lot of people that are listening right now, I know either don't get 7 to 9 hours sleep, have trouble falling asleep, or have trouble staying asleep. That is due to your brain being too aroused from too much cortisol during the day. So all the strategies that we use are, you know, oh, we're going to use something for a sleeping pill, right? Well, no, because you need to dampen your stress during the day and probably give something for sleep at night. And so a morning awaking serum cortisol is a valid number for finding out whether you're in trouble or not with future health risk. So typically you'll see that number between, say, for example, 5 and 25. Once you're up around 18 with your serum cortisol, 18 and higher, you're making too high of a morning cortisol. What that's going to lead to, more insulin resistance, your immune system gets disrupted, you start to store fat more, and it starts to make your thyroid hormones less effective because you don't convert your inactive, your less active thyroid hormone T4 to your more active hormone T3. Why is that important? You need thyroid hormones to burn fat, to absorb nutrients, to regulate your heart rhythm. So cortisol in the morning with a blood test, really important. And it's correlated, like higher cortisols are correlated to all kinds of problems. Now, you could do a 4-point salivary cortisol. And
which
map
is what
out.
I like to do, yes.
Yeah, it's a good thing. I mean, I get both because sometimes I see that people still are squirting out a big amount of cortisol, like on an instant demand, which is a blood test, but then their reserve is really stinking, you know, from the salivary panel. And so the 4-point, the advantage is that it kind of shows you where your diurnal pattern is, or what does your pattern of cortisol release look like? Probably the number one predictor for future cardiometabolic illness, a predictive for breast cancer, predictive for prostate cancers, and even predictive for things like memory loss and cognitive disorders, is the flattening of the cortisol curve. So if your cortisol no longer follows the pattern of high in the morning, moderate at noon, lower in the evening, and lowest at bed, if your body isn't following that pattern, and it flattens out in the morning, and you somewhat no longer have a high and low, or relatively speaking, no higher and low, that means that your nervous system has gotten, compromised, that you've got a neuroinflammatory process going on in your brain, and that your future all-cause risk for things like heart attacks, cancers, metabolic syndrome has at least at 3 1/3 times higher risk.
Well,
that's like a 300% risk, right? That's crazy.
And I have to say, because I do a lot of saliva testing, I rarely, if ever, find anyone who has an optimal cortisol, panel. And which is really scary because we're all under so much stress, and it shows up when I do that saliva testing. So we're pretty much all exhausting our adrenal glands these days.
Yeah, it's a tough one that you just have to realize. And the other thing is, if you're doing shift work, you're going to have to work twice as hard to stay healthy. I mean, if you're a night shift worker, or you're even an evening shift worker, you're throwing off your chemistry, and you're going to have to work even harder at your labs and using nutrients to stay intact. And I just tell people nowadays, you know what? Even if you sleep good, take a little bit of melatonin, because that'll help reset your cortisol pattern. And it also happens to be, protective of your kidneys, protective of your intestine, and protective of your brain. And now that we know that it really doesn't create any negative feedback, that kind of was, debunked. Take a little bit of melatonin. You'll sleep a little deeper. I mean, if you're groggy in the morning, take a little less. But give your brain that little bit of signal that it's time to go to sleep. And I find it incredibly valuable. And you got to remember, as soon as you're making too much cortisol, you're going to be making bad lipids. You're going to be losing bone. And so when your cortisol's high and you're under a lot of stress, you literally melt your bone down to get the minerals from your bone to buffer all of the acids that are taking place because of the chronic stress hormones coursing through your body. Now, the problem with that is when your bone melts down, that leads to calcification of your arteries. That bone mineral density loss is directly correlated to the development of plaque. And cortisol is directly correlated to both. So it's important that you get your cortisol level. If you can't afford a 4-point salivary cortisol, just have a regular blood panel, or at least see what your morning one is. It's not going to be as accurate, but at least you're getting some kind of idea. You kind of get your head out of the sand and realize that, stress has a physiologic effect. It's not just whether you're strong-willed or, you can endure or not. It literally changes your chemistry.
And it impacts just about everything. I would rather have someone do a salivary test, a saliva test for their cortisol levels, then spend a lot of money on doing some other testing, hormone testing, for instance, because if those adrenals are fatigued, everything is going to go out. Your blood sugars, you're not going to be able to balance your blood sugar. You're going to lose your memory. You're not going to be able to sleep. You know, your immune system's going to be compromised. Everything goes out of whack if those adrenals are fatigued.
That's exactly it. You're exactly right. I mean, there was actually a study that came out of the clinics and journals in endocrinology and metabolism, and they basically finally admitted that as free cortisol goes up in your body, your growth hormone goes down, your testosterone goes down. If you're a woman, your estrogens go down. And so what do? We start lathering everybody up with hormones, but we don't fix the real problem, the real culprit, which is your stress response.
Mm-hmm.
So you
I'm
never
so glad
get
you
to
said
the real
that.
Cause, and then... The hormones that you took half the time don't even work because the cortisol still has its effect on you. So it really is something that's primordial that people need to look at. And I got to tell you, for women, you know, look, once you hit menopause, right, more women die of heart disease than men. So this isn't, you know, kyolic isn't a herb that you think about for men in heart disease. Once women are, you know, menopausal, they're plaquing their vessels at a beautiful rate, right? I mean, it's just happening, especially because they're still the caregivers. They're still the caretakers. They're still taking on, you know, the worries of their family, right? And now they don't have the estradiol to protect them. Their cortisols are pumping high, and they're gaining weight, becoming insulin resistant, and it becomes this perfect storm. And that it's kind of why I think it's important that, you know, everybody get to their lab test, because a perimenopausal or a postmenopausal woman with elevated cortisol that's insulin resistant, that has maybe thyroid imbalances, she is absolutely ripe to become the woman who ends up with breast cancer. And that's why we need to look at our lab values so we can head off these terrible illnesses through lifestyle and proper change in diet and the use of, you know, judicious use of dietary supplements.
So we've come to the end of the show, Jim, and I mean, this is such important information. I'd like everyone to really pick up the book, Your Blood Never Lies, How to Read a Blood Test for a Longer, Healthier Life with James LaValle, by James. And he goes through all these values and the recommended supplements and lifestyle factors. And maybe Jim, we have to have you back, because this is so critical. This is an area of such ignorance. We really need to understand not only how to read this, but the implications. And you have done such a brilliant job, and it's such a great service to all of us. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
Oh, Dr. Selma, I am so happy to have been on it. And I will come back anytime that you request, because I know how great a job you do in educating people.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you, James LaValle, and thank all of you for joining me today. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You've been listening to What Women Must Know, and always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.